At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Lou Guerrero, and I'll be with you here today on Wednesday, August 28th, 2024, as we try and wade the waters of what seems to be a changing and reshaping economic and political landscape. If you think about where we were, over 9% inflation just a few short months ago, to where we are now on the cusp of a rate cutting cycle, on the cusp of maybe a resurgence in global demand headed into mid next year. Certainly a lot of changes may come about related to political change, related to the election. And so what we have to realize is that things don't necessarily change all the time or change quickly. But regardless of the time frame, we have to adapt. We have to adapt our lives, and we have to adapt our financial portfolios. So to that end, we have some very interesting stories and topics for you today, some lessons that maybe can help make you a better investor along the way. And of course, we'll be answering your finance and investment questions that come into the show live or through voicemail or through our InvestTalk YouTube comment section. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and what we have to look forward to for the rest of the week, which also happens to be the rest of this month. And we'll run down those show topics. But first, let's answer our first caller question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is Brandon in Washington, D.C. Curious on your thoughts of Alarm.com Holdings, ticker ALRM. I will look forward to your thoughts on the podcast. Thank you.
So ticker ALRM, Alarm.com Holdings, is a cloud-based service company that installs for commercial and residential purposes security systems. And so not only are they selling security systems that are web-enabled, but they also have a subscription service, which has been probably the primary driver of their growth. Now, going back to 2022, they had some pretty big growth from 2020 to 2022. And that's tapered off a little bit. Their most recent quarterly report, $234 million in sales, represents about 4% year-over-year growth. And that 4% number seems pretty stable for the next several months, going into September, December, then March of next year. Now, with that revenue growth, their cash flow has improved, which is solid. They had about $526 million in debt at the end of last year. That's doubled since then, perhaps in an attempt to expand. And their earnings projections have been pretty flat. I know their guidance in the most recent quarter, they downgraded their guidance just slightly. And we've been seeing some insider sales from executives, specifically their CFO. Now, when we talk about insider sales, that's not necessarily a bad thing. A lot of insiders get compensated with stock. And so when you get too high a concentration, as we recommend for you listeners that also get compensated in stock, it makes sense to divest from some of those shares, to lower your exposure to that one company. And so it's just something to consider within the full picture of slowing growth rather than something that is necessarily a red flag. Now, the profitability has kind of fallen a little bit, but is projected to be better this year. Net margin at 13%, up from 9.2%. But I think the main issue here, I mean, this name has been ranging for about a year now. It was on an uptrend, a short-term uptrend for a couple months, but it's back down to where it was practically a year ago, trading at $58.53 a share. And so sometimes when a company tells you that growth still looks slow, you should believe them. In this case, it's trading lower than it has been for some time, about 4.5 times price to book, about 19 times cash flow. So still lower on a relative valuation perspective than it has been, but I could see this name ranging for quite some time until, one, people have more confidence in spending. Their hardware products are probably more than anything a one-time installation. So you would need more consumers to come into the market that need that installation. And so until you see their current growth strategy in terms of their SaaS and license revenue building, or at least their projection of it moving forward building, I think it'll probably range. I'd keep it on my watch list, but I don't think now is the time. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45, 50 minutes or so. And here's some of a little bit of what we have planned for you today. Our main topic today, my focus point, it's about Bitcoin, specifically Bitcoin's critical week, and how a Fed-driven surge and NVIDIA's influence might move the foremost cryptocurrency. This week is set to be crucial for Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency market following a notable price surge influenced by the Federal Reserve's recent decisions. The anticipated earnings report from NVIDIA, which dropped today, may also further impact market trends, underscoring the relationship between technology stocks and digital currencies. We'll also talk a little bit about ways to build your credit outside of taking out loans or taking out credit itself. So what are some fintech companies doing to help consumers build their credit? We'll also touch on Berkshire Hathaway, which became the first $1 trillion non-tech company intraday today. What are some lessons we can take away from the Oracle of Omaha? What are some lessons we can take away from the reach that this company now has within the U.S. economy? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on another takeaway from the summit in Jackson Hole with various central bankers, and that is the rising risks of growing government debt. We also have some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on 401k to Roth IRA strategies and one on JD.com Inc. That's ticker JD. We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now. Now we're going to do a short break. And on the other side, we'll look at today's market activity and then get to more of your questions here on InvestTalk.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk.
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THC.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. You've got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James in San Francisco, who has called in with a question. How can we help you today, James?
Hi. How are you doing? Thank you so much for taking the call. I had a question. It's a security. The ticker symbol is GEN, Gen Digital. Hopefully you're familiar with it. It's a company that I've been watching. It's not a explosively growing company, but it seems like a good, stable tech sector stock. But I got nervous in the global sell-off a few weeks ago. I sold my position, and I'm wondering if, even considering the current, political environment that we're in, if it would be a good long-term holding.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Gen Digital is a cloud security, digital safety, threat protection, identity protection, information protection company. And it was hit back in the recent sell-off, as a lot of companies in this sector were. And I will state that this is why we don't get nervous and sell off our positions in sell-offs, because historically speaking, the market does recover. But taking a look at this name specifically, I think the thing that hits at me the most is, and you said it, there's not a lot of growth here. You know, their peak revenue was back in 2019. Now they've been steadily growing again since 2021, and their cash flow is positive and improving. Now it was negative up until 2021, which is certainly not a good thing. And so looking at their profits, their gross margin has been kind of declining, maybe hinting at a lack of efficiency in terms of converting its revenues into profits. Now, that's certainly not something we like. Now, looking at its net margin, projected to grow to 35% this year. But is that a function of the debt they're taking on? Well, they've been paying down their debt, though their debt has tripled since 2021, or doubled since 2021, about $4 billion in 2021, now $8.5 billion as the most recent quarter. It's a $16 billion market cap company. It pays a 2% dividend yield, about. And it's got a little bit of short interest out there, but not too much. And so thematically, I like what you're thinking, especially in the wake of government notices about potential hacking towards political campaigns, in the wake of something we mentioned the other day, where we had 2.9 billion records stolen. So cybersecurity is definitely an important part, or rather an important theme in terms of investing. But my problem here is that there just isn't a lot of growth. You know, it's up 28% over the past year, up 40% year to date. Maybe keep it on your watch list, but this is a hold for me. This is a company that over the past 3 years has doubled its amount of debt. It's become a lot more levered. 1.75 is the interest coverage ratio at the end of last year. That's ticked back up to 2.65. But for me, too much debt on here with not a lot of growth is how I would sum it up. I like the theme, though. I like the theme you're thinking about. Cybersecurity is very important. Thanks for the call. Now, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks were lower. They ended off of their worst levels today. The Dow was down almost 40 basis points. S&P 500 down 60 basis points. The NASDAQ down 1.12%, and the Russell 2000 down 65 basis points today. I'd say most of today's weakness came after a mostly higher but uneventful session yesterday. Stocks remain somewhat listless. The market really waits for its next round of catalysts. Big tech, broadly lower, with NVIDIA down in choppy trading ahead of the results that released after the close. Other underperformers, looks like semis didn't do particularly well. Energy, tech hardware, copper, and aluminum. Outperformers included pet products, Chewy, a particularly good name today, department stores, banks, insurance companies, credit cards, trucking, tobacco, and utilities. Dollar index was up 60 basis points, gold finishing down the same amount, 60 basis points. Bitcoin futures down 4.6%, dipping back below the $60,000 mark. WTI crude oil ended down 1.3%, and overall, you know, I think the weakness was fairly broad-based, but nothing seemingly definitive as shifting away from what the path of least resistance seems to be. It's mostly the market in waiting mode. And so with NVIDIA, beat and a raise was widely expected. That's what we got. It wasn't as big a beat as there has been. So certainly it'll be interesting to see how the market reacts to that tomorrow. Looking ahead, the buyback blackout window comes into play in mid-September, as does negative seasonality. Election uncertainty also is going to be a big overhang that might prevent the market from moving sustainably upward. Now, there's nothing on the U.S. economic calendar today, though Treasury supply again was in focus. There's a poorly received $70 billion five-year auction on the back of some poorly received auctions in the recent past. Some Fed speak. Bostic said last week the Fed can't wait until inflation is back to 2%. To begin cutting. Thursday brings initial claims, the second release of the Q2 GDP projection, and pending home sales, while personal income, spending, and PCE inflation, as well as Chicago manufacturing PMI and University of Michigan consumer sentiment, are out on Friday. A reminder, core PCE inflation expected to be the highlight of the week. Street looking for 20 basis point month-over-month increase, which would push the year-over-year rate up 10 basis points, to 2.7%. Another thing to look out for the rest of the week, several other high-profile tech reporters, Dell, CRM, CrowdStrike, ONTAP, over the next couple of days. While I think the big highlight, aside from PCE, is going to be the employment report next week. That'll probably be the key input that looks at whether or not we'll see a 25 or a 50 basis point rate cut in September. Now we're moving into a break, still to come. I will tackle more of your finance and investment questions and get to our main focus point on Bitcoin. Stay with me. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about Bitcoin. And specifically, Bitcoin's what some see as a critical week because of a potential Fed-driven surge, but also the influence NVIDIA has, not just on the tech space or on the market as a whole, but on Bitcoin specifically. Now, this week could be crucial, pivotal for Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency market. Before the week began, Bitcoin surged ahead towards the 65,000 mark. And a lot of that was due to broader dynamics at play in financial markets. The important context here is with regards to significant monetary policy shifts, hence that the Federal Reserve will begin cutting interest rates soon, because this sort of monetary easing typically reduces the opportunity cost of holding non-yielding assets like Bitcoin, making them more attractive to investors seeking higher returns. That's one thing that may drive it ahead. Another is the cost of capital is just cheaper. So that begs the question, is now the time to invest in Bitcoin? Well, as of today, as of market close, as of just now, the price of Bitcoin has fallen off. It fell off 4.5% during the trading day. It's below the 60,000 mark now. And so it's subsequently fallen and started to follow a similar ranging that we've seen for quite some time now. And this is interesting to me because for a while, people thought that a major catalyst towards Bitcoin price appreciation would be the announcement of ETFs. And certainly the price is higher now than it was. I believe it was in the 20, 30,000 range before the ETFs were launched. But you think about the dynamic of ETF volume. ETF volume is less sticky volume, meaning that it's more in and out than holding the underlying cryptocurrency itself. I would think that the explosion of ETFs and volume being soaked in by ETFs would lend itself towards making Bitcoin's price fall more in times of economic stress. If you are opening up Bitcoin towards different investors, ones that don't already hold it are therefore going to be the ones that least understand it. I put in air quotes. And so I think the effect down the road that this might have on Bitcoin isn't exactly what people intended it to be. Now, the same dynamics apply to Bitcoin as with any other asset. The thing that drives Bitcoin higher and the reason why it's become more correlated with markets and specifically more correlated with tech is because more liquidity and flows is what drives it higher. And there certainly are some benefits, but the benefit of holding Bitcoin seems to me the only real explanation people have is price goes up. And I still haven't had someone provide me with a reasonable explanation that doesn't just hint towards the fact that it has a finite supply. If it is a currency, it needs to be a medium of exchange. If it's volatile, people won't use it as a medium of exchange. And so the risks here, and this is the risk of owning anything that you might not understand. This is why we always preach to know what you own. The risk is that none of what people says comes to fruition here. This is the ultimate long duration asset here. There is no cash flow that backs up the worth of Bitcoin. There is currently no large swath of people or businesses that accept it as payment. And I've mentioned a concept multiple times during this. I mentioned Bitcoin approaching 65,000. I mentioned Bitcoin dipping back down below 60,000. And what I'm quoting Bitcoin in is in dollars. And so the main argument that Bitcoin is the money of the future, to me, doesn't seem to be the case, given that we still quote its price in dollars. Now, I still think it's trying to find its footing. I think the technology is fascinating. I think a public ledger of transactions that's immutable has its benefits and can benefit a lot of things, health records. And maybe it is, as Ray Dalio suggests, just one of many in competition for money of the future. But I think when we look at assets, we need to think about our holistic portfolio as looking at correlations. And certainly over the last couple of years, Bitcoin has become more and more correlated with the traditional asset classes that we already include. And so I would say that even if you want to include it as part of your portfolio, it has outsized risks. And investing is about risk and return. But as always, know what you own. Now, interestingly enough, we got a question about Bitcoin. It says, what are your thoughts on Bitcoin? I struggle to see a value in an asset that is not physical, like gold, does not produce yield or earnings, like bonds or stocks. Having said that, I've been wrong on it for a while, and I'm wondering if I'm missing out. I'm wondering, how do you value assets like that? And is it even worth doing? Here's what I'll say, in addition to everything that I just said. You have not yet been wrong about the reasons why you do not think that it is a beneficial investment, other than the fact that price went up. And so our job is to fundamentally analyze why we're owning what we're owning. And just because the price goes up doesn't mean you're necessarily wrong. Prices go up so long as there's a market for it. And for now, there will continue to be a market for Bitcoin. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll talk about utility stocks and how they've been surging as the AI revolution transforms traditional market signals. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. If you've ever dreamed of a world-class sailing adventure, I have exciting news for you. Whether you're a seasoned boater or someone desiring to experience the world differently, far away from the crowds and rushed itineraries, I've got the vacation you've been wanting for possibly a long time. I'm not talking about a cruise. Instead, imagine a private yacht reserved just for you and your friends and family. In fact, it would be ideal for groups of up to 10 guests. Destinations include the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, St. Lucia, Belize, Tahiti, Greece, Italy, Thailand, and many more. You've seen the pictures on social media, people basking on a yacht off the shores of Italy or sailing the iconic waters of Tahiti. And you ask yourself, how do they do this? Well, this magical experience can be yours with the help of The Moorings. For more than 50 years, The Moorings has set the standard for sail charters, power charters, and all-inclusive crewed yacht charters in over 20 destinations across the globe. In fact, The Moorings is the world's premier yacht charter vacation provider and is proud to have one of the newest fleets in the industry, including state-of-the-art catamarans or a classic monohull. So, when you are ready to enjoy the world in all its majesty, authentic and unscripted, prepared to see more and be immersed in the real culture and lifestyle of your vacation destination. Without planned excursions and rigid tour groups, The Moorings is waiting for you. Renting your own private yacht for a week is more affordable than you think. Now that you are inspired, your journey begins at moorings.com.
Hey, it's Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of Lovesac and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Curious how successful people really made it? Tune in to hear from guests like Travis Mills, a true American hero, and Nate Checkets, co-founder of Roan. We dive deep into their stories and lessons that shape them so you can skip the trial and error and get straight to the good stuff. You can find me wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Rick from Hawaii. Great show, by the way. Hey, I'm trying to decide on the better strategy for this year between selling a stock I own that has become a large part of my portfolio or converting an equal dollar amount of my regular 401k to my Roth IRA. Both have an impact on my taxes and Medicare cost, although not exactly the same, but they're similar. So I was just seeing if you had thoughts or recommendations on this decisions and how I should weigh them. Mahalo.
Well, thanks for the call. And I'm jealous that you're in Hawaii. I was just there a couple weeks ago, and I wish I was back. I will say that. But, you know, I think the answer to this question depends on a lot of factors. One is the motivation for why you're selling. If you are trying to lower your exposure to a stock that has become a big part of your portfolio, converting from your 401k, where I imagine you have limited options, into an IRA, a Roth IRA, yes, would give you more capital in that account that you could use to diversify, but the concentration of that stock will still remain, because you should think of your stock concentration as not just the concentration in one portfolio, but of everything you own. Now, that could be why you asked. I don't think it is. It sounds to me like you were just deciding whether or not, or rather, you need liquidity, you need money. How should you get it? And so the answer to that question is something that depends on your tax rate, right? So when you convert from a 401k to a Roth IRA, you have to pay taxes on that. Now, one thing that is beneficial for our clients and how we help our clients is we actually have a Roth conversion tool, which takes your current income, your expenses, your current tax bracket. You can do lump sum, you can do recurring conversions, and it tells you what the tax cost of all of these things are. It sounds to me like you need something like that, because without knowing your tax bracket, without knowing your income situation, it's impossible for me to say what is going to be the most beneficial from an after-tax basis. Now, that being said, I also want to point out that if you have a particularly large position, you might want to just sell that anyway and diversify within your Roth IRA. But with the context of your question, I think you're asking about you needing access to money and what's the best way to do it. And so you should consult somebody who has access to your tax information for the answer to that. I hope I was able to help. It's difficult without knowing your specific circumstances. Thanks for the call. Now, one thing that tends to frustrate a lot of people, frustrated me as well when I was in college and without credit, is how difficult it can be to build credit. As an aside, I decided to build credit by getting an Amazon credit card and buying a drone and paying that off. That was the first purchase I ever made. I still have the drone, took some great photographs. But anyway, so in order to help, fintechs are trying to revolutionize credit scoring with products like what they call credit builder cards. And what that does is it aims to circumvent the traditional credit paradigms. And how does it do that? Well, it allows customers to deposit funds and have their transactions reported as credit activity. And what that does is it tries to address a significant barrier in financial inclusivity, and that's the need for a credit history to borrow money and the necessity of borrowing to build a credit history. It's a paradox. It's difficult. So this is essentially a debit card of sorts where you can deposit funds and then draw down on those funds. Now, credit builder cards such as those offered by Chime and Credit Sesame are designed to report only positive data, enhancing their appeal. These products do not require traditional credit checks and structurally minimize the risks of delinquency, thus promoting a more inclusive credit system. The shift is particularly significant for individuals new to credit or those historically reliant on cash and debit transactions. And by facilitating the building of credit histories without the traditional borrowing, these products really aim to be more inclusive. They impact broader financial inclusion, affecting decisions by employers, landlords, anybody who considers your credit history. Because credit history is considered in a lot of places. Now, traditional banks' slow adoption of these fintech innovations and, frankly, mixed responses from credit reporting agencies show that there's a bit of a divide and a hurdle towards making these more accessible and usable. Experian sees these products as beneficial, enhancing the accuracy of credit reporting. TransUnion, though, remains cautious. And that cautiousness reflects the broader hesitancy about integrating these new tools into what has been for quite some time an established credit scoring system. But the financial industry is constantly evolving. It's constantly in flux. And fintechs are driving a lot of that innovation. And specifically here, that innovation is refocusing an ongoing debate about how to measure, report credit activity, and the tensions between innovation and traditional financial services, not just within credit, but broadly. And so the impact of these new tools on consumers, on financial behavior, and opportunities could, in a good way, in my opinion, redefine consumer financial health and make credit more accessible for everybody. Well, we played a question from a listener in Hawaii. Let's go the other direction and go over to the United Kingdom.
This is Josh calling from the UK. Had a quick question on ticker symbol CX, company Cemex. This is a company I've owned for quite a while, and it seems like it's, you know, kind of pulled back to maybe a little area of support here. And I was wondering if you thought this would maybe be kind of a good area to pick this up. I appreciate it. Thanks.
So Cemex, excuse me, ticker CX, is a company that supplies construction materials and services. Now, taking a look at this company, they are mid-cap, $9 billion market cap company, and they've been down 22% year-to-date, 27% over the past 52 weeks. Now, even with that, sales have grown pretty substantially from $15.5 billion in 2022 to $17 billion in 2023. That's $17.3 billion, projected to be $17.6 billion this year. So growth doesn't seem to be an issue, even at a time when construction materials companies broadly are not doing particularly well. So even in 2024, though it's underperforming the S&P 500 by almost 40%, it's still outperforming its industry by 1%. And so that's an indication that maybe this is one of the better companies within the space. Now, they lost money in 2020, but since then they've been positive. And over the next 2 years, their earnings are projected to increase pretty substantially. Now, they did buy back shares, so that does skew earnings per share. But regardless, everything looks to be on the right track. They have $8.8 billion in debt, though. Though I imagine most of that is low interest bearing and pushed outward because their interest coverage ratio is about 4x. So they're not overly levered. Now, with that being said, that was $8.8 billion at the end of 2023. Of the most recent quarter, $7.5 billion. So they paid down $1 billion worth of debt, $1.3 billion to be more specific, since the end of last year. So it looks to me like they're using their revenues, they're using their profits to pay down some of that debt, which is good. That's what we like. Now, they pay a small dividend, about 34 cents per share. But I think the general message here is the downward movement over the past year. Now, it's down 5% today. That's something to note as well. But the downward movement over the past year, past trailing 1 year, the past 52 weeks, and through year to date is not seemingly because of something this company is doing wrong. It's because of the industry as a whole. And so I look at this company who is paying down its debt, though it does have quite a bit, whose profitability is improving, cash flow is improving. And I think that we may be approaching a time where we might want to buy as demand starts to rebound heading into next year. Now, it's important to note that it looks like it broke some lower support. There's some more support down at the about 580, the 580 level. But over the past couple months, it's been on a clear downward trend. So if it holds at around the $6 level, I think that's a good time to pick it up. You could maybe start to buy now and dollar cost average in, that is buy more over longer periods of time to potentially lower your purchase price, your acquisition cost. But overall, I think this is a good company that's going towards a, or has been going through a tough demand cycle, as has the industry as a whole. Thanks for the call. Now let's flip over to our YouTube channel question bank. This question about TOL. What do you think about Toll Brothers? And what do you think it will do in the long run? So Toll Brothers builds new construction homes. And so what I imagine is this company is having a similar story. It's not, though. It's actually having a great time. It's up 38% year to date, up 84% over the past year. And so taking a look at that, let's look at how their revenue has grown. Well, about 7% revenue growth on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. About $1 billion. So maybe about 10% in this year. Certainly a good thing. It's trading at 9.9 times price to earnings, trading at a 2 times price to book value. Its cash flow has been improving. They've been buying back shares, actually. 5 years ago, they had 150 million, about 150 million shares outstanding. Now they have about 100 million shares outstanding. That's a pretty significant share repurchase program. Now they pay a 64 basis point dividend yield. And so in terms of dividend per share, it's been growing pretty substantially. It's actually doubled in the past 5 years. The reason being, though, I just told you they bought back a bunch of shares. So that's going to be an artificially inflated increase in dividends per share. Now, their asset base hasn't grown that much. That's fine. Their gross margin has increased, meaning that they've become more efficient in converting growing revenues, and their net margin looks to be improving as well. So when I look at this, I see a company that has been growing actually double the company that we just looked at. They've been outperforming their industry by 13%. They've grown faster than the overall large cap index as well. And they're not too large. They're kind of in the sweet spot. They've got a $14 billion market cap company with not much debt, about $3 billion in debt. And so with their earnings upgrade, their debt being paid down a little bit over the last quarter, everything looks to be headed in the right direction, and they buy back shares. Also thinking politically about potential for the next administration to want to deal with housing prices by building more homes. I think thematically and financially, this company makes sense. Thanks for watching. Let's talk a little bit about Warren Buffett, a man who I'm sure you've heard of. And his company, Berkshire Hathaway, reached the $1 trillion market cap mark, which is a pretty significant milestone because he's the first non-tech company to do so. Now, this achievement underscores a couple of things. The diversity and resilience of Berkshire's investment portfolio, which spans critical sectors of the American economy. It includes railways, insurance, energy. Despite a generally cautious market approach this year, Buffett divested from several stock positions, notably, and boosted cash reserves. Berkshire's seen its stock value surge nearly 30% since January, substantially outperforming the S&P 500. Now, this performance is, I would say, particularly noteworthy, given Buffett's strategic adjustment in response to market conditions he perceives as overheated. He actually reduced the stock buyback. He signaled his belief that shares might be a little bit overvalued in doing so, aligning with his long-held principle of capital preservation. You have to remember one of his investing mantras is one we should all live by, which is don't lose money. Now, this cautious strategy, I would say, not only reflects Buffett's assessment of overall market valuations, but also positions Berkshire to take advantage of potential market downturns with that increased liquidity. Remember, we talked about this, I think it was yesterday, about emergency funds, why emergency funds are good. Because emergency funds allow you to focus within your investment portfolio on investing. And having access to funds in economic downturns can be incredibly beneficial. In fact, the growth of Berkshire's cash reserves grew to a record $277 billion, which is really a testament to his conservative investing approach. You also juxtapose that against a landscape where many companies and investment entities are now facing liquidity crises based on market pressures. A lot of private funds that have to divest from assets quickly. A lot of people that bought commercial properties that are not now worth as much. Berkshire's robust cash positions provided that protective buffer while also enabling strategic flexibility and stability. The prudence that he exhibits is important at all times, but particularly crucial in times of economic uncertainty. Cash reserves can provide, as I said, both security and opportunity for advantageous acquisitions or investments. Overall, I think Berkshire Hathaway's $1 trillion valuation not only highlights its significant impact on an integration with the American economy, but also illustrates a well-executed balance, a balance of conservative strategy while taking advantage of opportunistic growth. And as the company transitions into new leadership, I think not only its next leader, but also all of us can take a lesson from the man who's been at the helm. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here. That is to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend? Something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke. Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about JD.com. Ticker symbol JD. It took a big stumble the other week when Walmart pulled its investing, I think, or sold some shares or whatever, about $3.7 billion, and the stock took a big tumble and dropped quite significantly. Technically, it seems pretty sound, and I'm thinking it's a bit undervalued at this level. Wanted to get your thoughts, see if you think it's a buy or not. I know it's a Chinese stock, so that's always a bit risky, but I wanted to, you know, get your opinions on it. Thank you so much and love what you guys do.
So JD.com is a e-commerce company. And they sell all sorts of products, electronics products, clothes. It's e-commerce. Now, if you take a look at how the stock has performed over the past couple of years, you'll notice that the stumble in the wake of Walmart removing its investment is rather something that's been going on for quite some time, since 2021. Which is interesting because over the past 5 years, their revenue growth has been pretty great, 17%. Now, their margins are smaller, but that's exactly what you'd expect for e-commerce businesses, for really commerce businesses generally. People that sell direct to consumer don't tend to have, especially clothes, electronics, don't tend to have wider, massive margins. But their cash flow has been steadily improving in a good way. Now, they have $9.6 billion in debt on a $36 billion market cap company. They pay a dividend. 2.81% is where the dividend currently stands. Now, that's probably bigger because the stock price has fallen. And their dividends per share, they actually just started paying a dividend in 2022, have grown. It grew from, looks like 60 cents in 2022, 74 cents last year, projected to be 81 cents this year. You know, this is an interesting question because you have a market that is dominated by few names. And this is a business that, like you mentioned, carries risks because it is domiciled and operated out of China. We were talking the other day about how transparency within the Chinese market is going down, something that certainly is not good. And this is an ADR. It trades in the US, but its underlying shares, again, are in China. But I think this is one of the companies that may be something that the Chinese government tries to prop up a little bit. And so when I see a price to book of 1.3, it's average over the past 5 years, 3.7. Its price to cash flow is 4. It is trading about as cheap as it has traded over the past 5 years. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't start trading cheaper. We all know that. And even with that 17% revenue growth, it's really slowed in the past couple years. But I think understanding the risks of investing in a company that is domiciled in China, for somebody who's willing to stomach that risk, this could certainly be a good investment. It is, like I said, as cheap as it has been in quite some time. And the profits are moving in the right direction. Their earnings are moving in the right direction. They lost money in 2021, 97 cents. They made in 2022, $2.15 last year, projected to be $3.88 this year, $4.07 next year. So if there ever was a time to get into JD.com, it would be now. But it is and has been on a precipitous downward trend for the past 4 years. And so until it breaks out, though, and you see growth start to correct towards where it was growing in the teens, you know, in the 20 teens, I'm not sure that it's going to outperform the industry broader. And just understanding the dynamics of the industry are important as well, because so much of it is soaked up by so few companies. Thanks for the call. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another Invest Talk program. I thank you for listening. Justin, thanks you for listening. And we both encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which they can find at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or anywhere they get their podcasts. Be sure if you get us on iTunes, though, to leave us a rate and review. We really do appreciate that. And if you're interested, you can check out our videos on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. That's Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.